Welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I am your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, First Works Baptist Church, and I'm joined by the fundamentalists of our church, Brother Adam Kanzari, Haitov Macy, and Marco Sanchez, and we got Brother Ulysses Hernandez, our evangelist, at the board. Looking forward to a great episode number three. And we're going to be discussing a variety of topics. We'll probably get into this matter of Asian hate is a popular hashtag today, and so we're going to be discussing that, going into the what really makes a society great, or what was it?
Civilization.
A civilization advanced, right? That's what we're talking about, and we'll see what other topics we get into, and so looking forward to tonight. First and foremost, how are we doing, guys?
Doing good. Good to be back.
Awesome. Good to be back, right? You guys took a little break from the Rod of Iron Podcast. Little backslidden, little going way just backwards.
Little bomb slidden.
Little heifer like.
Bomb slidden.
Yeah, a little bomb slidden.
Bomb slidden.
I have a kid now. That's different.
You have a child, yes. Right.
Adam's a dad. Call CPS.
I gotta cut that out now. His name is James.
He is.
James.
James Adam.
James Adam Kanzari. He's a happy little boy.
He's a happy feller, little rascal.
He laughs a lot and cries a lot in the service.
Yeah.
Or no, not cries. He cries out loud.
What's the difference?
He spares not.
I'm not saying he's like weeping. He's just like. I actually despise racism because it does exist to a certain extent. I'm not going to say it doesn't. Racism does exist. You know how I know? Because I grew up around racist people. It got kind of quiet in here, dude. It's true. There's racist people in our church. I'm looking at two right now.
I think it's just misappropriated hate. I don't think there's really any such thing as racism.
So I think the definition
people just don't
of
know what they're doing.
Yeah, we're not racist.
Because there's
I think
no
prejudice,
such thing
right?
as racism.
Yeah, what do you define as racism?
Prejudice.
There's one human race.
There's people who are prejudiced.
It's just some races are better than others.
I don't believe that crap. No. I just notice patterns is all I'm saying.
That's stupid. That's so stupid. Patterns? What is that? Yeah, well, he used to say certain races, he would say, have certain patterns. Because they're saying, like, black people have never done anything. But hold on a second.
Malcolm
you know,
X.
Hold on a second. Shut up.
The
There's been plenty of black people who were Bible-believing Christians that I guarantee have won more souls to Christ than most people who say that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So there you go. Because in Christ, it doesn't matter. Yeah. See what I'm saying? See, that's what I mean. It's just like, it's so stupid when they try to seek patterns and all these cultures are more, you know, well, hold on a second. You're throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
I mean, there are some cultures that are more, I don't think it's more of a racial thing, more of a cultural thing. There are some cultures that are worse than others.
Yeah, but people don't, but worse they don't say
what?
Culture.
That's going to be subjective. Let's talk about like objective things.
But at this point, it's like kind of synonymous at that point. Like it, if you're of a certain race, there's a very high chance you're going to belong to that culture, even in America.
I don't agree with
America less and less.
Because there's black people in Guatemala who aren't like the black people here.
Well, yeah, obviously they're not.
Okay, well, you just made a
because the black culture here is different than the black culture in
exactly.
Guatemala. Because I'm not talking about Guatemala. I've never been
to
Guatemala.
But people, what he's saying is black people in general.
Hmm.
And that's what people say. They say black people in general. They're saying just they're putting all black people together when they make a statement like that.
No,
but that's not true.
Yeah, because like the black people here aren't like the same as the black people in Africa.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? Black Christians are different than non-believing
Christians.
Blacks.
Or blacks.
Yeah, that's retarded.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, different hell.
Look at Maury.
Yeah.
Maury's black. He's doing great things for God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how are we different? As Christians, we're supposed to understand that there's very little difference in people. And it's just kind of across the board. It has nothing to do with whether you're black or white. I mean, if we're talking about white people build more things,
Jackson over here, bro.
White people build more like cities, like cities and the banks that take advantage of everybody.
Yeah, that's the Jews like, that built that. Come on now.
The Jews are white. Or are they black?
They are white. Jews are
white. Israelites.
Jews are Polish. They're white. I used to live in Bixby Knowles.
Yeah.
Right next to a synagogue. You see a bunch of Jews walking in and out of the synagogue that just look like white people with red hair.
And who's to say like...
And funny curls.
Is building a building like what determines whether somebody's better?
According to these people, it is. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Civilization is like the marker of success to them.
Yeah. And it's not for a Christian though.
It's not. And civilization, is it still determined by like building things like cities?
Yes.
Why?
That's what that word means.
Oh, really? Just building cities?
I mean, having like a civilization is like having like a functioning society, right?
But a functioning society is not necessarily like building
it's buildings. It's not. I don't think it is. Why would it be?
Well, like, we'll just look up the definition of civilization.
A functioning society like takes a lot more than just being able to build things.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, North Korea. But that's part of it. But that's
part of it. North Korea is a great example. They have a bunch of big buildings, but like no people in them.
Look it up, brother.
They're just cardboard.
Yeah. Brother Evangelist.
Like from the outside, it looks real, but there's nobody in there.
Yeah, ask Dennis Rodman.
What does he say? The stage of human, social, and
cultural development or the station that is considered most advanced. Social and cultural.
Social and cultural.
Yeah.
And it shows a picture of the pyramids.
And I like, see how it says most advanced? It's like.
That means buildings.
No, no, but like. If you compare country, if you put that definition to countries now.
Yeah, zoom in.
No, just your mouse. Just go like this.
I think it's Command Z. No, wait. Command Z.
Finish what you were saying, though.
There's a magnifying glass on the top right.
Defining civilization.
If you were to take that definition to like modern day, you would say that the most civilized countries are countries like America, where we're technically the most socially advanced, we're the most culturally advanced. But then if you compare that to less socially and culturally advanced countries, like the ones in like Southeast Asia or like the heart of Africa, there is more civilization here than there is in places like that.
Right.
That's what
now,
that
why
word
is
means.
That? Wait, hold on. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because of Christian values.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So again, at the end of the day, the main element that's missing in these uncivilized areas is Christianity.
Yeah, I mean,
Christianity is what improves a society, not the color of your skin.
And it's not just, it can't just be one generation. It has to be generation upon generation. That's why.
Of Christians.
Of Christians. Yeah. Of like a Christian culture, so to speak. And that's why, like, you can have maybe have one generation of Christianity, but if it gets snuffed out in like an uncivilized country, they're not just going to keep going down that road. They're just going to regress. Like, you have those like tribes in the Indian islands and stuff like that who are like have less technology now than they did in Genesis with Tubal Cain and stuff like that. They regressed. They didn't keep going forward.
Well, you think of like England, for example. Mm-hmm. And England was like the hub of Christianity at one point. They were sending out missionaries, but now it's like become like this godless nation.
Yeah.
But you would still consider it to be a developed
country just because it has generation upon generation.
It's reaping the benefits of the previous generations.
Of its ancestors, basically.
Yeah, spiritual wealth.
Well, spiritual wealth versus just carnal wealth.
Right. And the thing is, like with Southeast Asia, the reason it's so underdeveloped is because of their acceptance of Buddhism and the rejection of Christianity.
And if you look at like the heart of Africa, or like you have like a lot of voodooism and cannibalism and hardcore like animism and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's they're actually really similar once you like kind of break it down.
See, I agree with that, but there's people who say that it has nothing to do with Christianity. It has to do with the color of your skin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just don't understand that concept. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm. There's actually another parallel I'd like to draw, like where people talk about like the Islamic Golden Age and like the Middle East and North Africa. What's interesting about that is that prior to Muhammad and the expansion of Islam, places like North Africa were like majority Christian, and a lot of places in the Middle East were very, very Christian. You had like the Assyrians and the Assyrian Orthodox Church and all this stuff. And obviously, we're not going to point to them and be like, these people are Christian, but they still had sort of cultural Christian values in a way. And of course, there were probably believers in the Middle East, but they weren't part of that Orthodox Church.
Well, I mean, you think of like Genghis Khan, for example.
Yeah, exactly. All his emperors were Nestorian and stuff like that.
And his empire expanded over many, many areas of the world, and he's like responsible for a lot of, you know, the modern advancement of like literature and just different things. And yet he wasn't a Christian. He wasn't necessarily a believer, but he had believers within his empire, and that could be the reason why.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same thing with
he accepted Christianity in his society and he embraced it, but he just wasn't he personally was not a believer.
And that's kind of the same thing with like the Islamic Golden Age, is what historians call it, is that, you know, like the hub of mathematics and science and like philosophy and all that stuff at one point was the Islamic Middle East, coming out of like the Islamic conquest of Muhammad and like the caliphs that followed. But in a way, they were reaping all like the sort of spiritual rewards that they've kind of accumulated from their ancestors for like 600 years.
There must be an exception to that rule, though.
But after that, the Middle East, after the Islamic Golden Age, kind of like spent its like power. It just went.
Exception to that rule, because the Roman Empire, for example, was a very advanced society, mm-hmm. but it was godless, though. Mm-hmm. And it was almost the opposite, because then when Christianity was integrated with, you know, the Roman beliefs, the pagan beliefs, it actually began to decline, didn't mm-hmm. it? And they actually created a really false religion that made it worse.
Well, I think with the Roman Empire, it's a bit more complex, because at that point, it was kind of like all the people who kind of sprung up out of it, weren't pagans. They were Christian sort of nations, like a lot of these Germanic tribes and stuff, and then that invaded, and then you had the a lot of the like the Visigoths that settled in Spain and then in North Africa as well. A lot of these were Christian nations, and they were a lot more advanced than Italy was. Mm-hmm. So in a way, they kind of reaped the rewards that maybe like of like a century or two of Christianity in the Roman Empire.
But I'm just saying the Roman Empire just in general, like when we talk about buildings. Mm-hmm. And their advancement as a society, I mean, it was pretty advanced. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're like basically the world power of that day, mm-hmm. and technology of that day or whatever, but they were just godless.
Yeah.
You know? So I would say like that's almost like an exception to the rule, though. Yeah. Right?
But I wonder if since like you had like, you know, the four empires of like Daniel's vision, mm-hmm. I wonder if that was kind of directed by God, because, you know, you had the Babylonian Empire, which was godless. You had the Persian Empire, which was pretty much godless. And you had the Roman Empire, but they all fulfilled their role in like God's plan. So maybe God allowed it.
Well, too, I think also because of the Roman Empire, you had all these roads where the gospel would be able to be able to reach different people all over the world. So he kind of basically permitted them to advance in order that the gospel would be able to be propagated mm-hmm. in the known world at that time.
And same thing with like Babylon, for example. Yeah. He allowed them to expand to punish Israel, but also to give us stories and lessons and stuff to take from.
Well, the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the just, kind of thing. So mm-hmm. it's just like, for them, it was like a political advancement, but God saw it as a means to propagate the gospel. He saw it as a tool for the furtherance of the gospel. Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't for Rome, you wouldn't have all these roads where I'm sure Paul was using and others were using in order to go get the gospel to different regions.
And that was even after like Paul. This was for centuries and centuries. Like the roads didn't go away after like mm-hmm. Bible times. Like, they were even used to go up to like England. Obviously, you need a boat and stuff. But yeah, like for centuries and centuries, it helped Christianity.
You guys ever seen a Roman map, ancient Roman map of like different roads? It was so weird. It's like a horizontal map. So it's like, you know, you lay out a map. See if you could look one up. It's like the Roman ancient map. And, you know, it's like today you have a map, you roll it up or whatever, and it's just like a square map. And then, you know, you have all these roads. But theirs would like, it was like a really thin look up like a Roman scroll map or something. And it was like a scroll, but it would extend super far, like, I don't know, a couple hundred feet or something like that.
Oh, and I think, is this what you're talking about?
Like this? Yeah, that's it right there. This thing? That's the way the map was like laid out. And it's like the roads would go either left or right or something like that.
Just right click the image and open in a new tab.
It was like their atlas.
And then click that.
Click that. Ancient world alive. Click it. Click it, bruh. Dang it. You told me to click it. I'm clicking it. Just forget it. Go back to Google. Yeah, just look at that.
I mean, ultimately, what defines an advanced civilization? It's not just the buildings.
Obviously, from a Christian perspective, an advanced civilization is a civilization that has God as their Lord. Yes. Happy is the people whose God is their Lord.
Correct.
You know? And so, you know, yeah, it's like that. That's what it looked like. It's kind of weird. But, you know, when, and I'm not saying that the nation is Christian, but they adhere to or believe in the true God. You know what I mean? Even if they're not saved.
And also, like, you cultural Christianity.
Cultural Christianity.
The leadership?
Yeah, I would say that. Yep. You know, I would say that to a certain extent. Or even if the leadership doesn't necessarily, they're not saved, but they adhere to Christian principles and ethics.
But I think that'll come.
Like, for example, our government is almost set up from a biblical,
but there's
a biblical
very
foundation
fine line. Because ultimately, like, that nation has to decide, or the people within that nation have to decide, who do they serve.
Yeah.
Well, because that nation does not serve God, although they kind of cherry pick certain things from the Bible or biblical principles. Ultimately, there's going to be a fine line that's drawn.
Well, that's what the word.
Because I think if you don't go with the Lord at the end of the day, I think you have like a big catastrophe in your future.
Well, here's what I think. I think a nation who has God as their Lord will be blessed of God, but God will allow, like, when a nation has God as their Lord, it's for the purpose of that nation seeking after God as individuals, as a nation. And so what happens is God begins to bless that nation, right? And the goodness and forbearance of God should lead them to repentance. That means churches should be popping up, preachers should be popping up, souls should be getting saved, but and God's word should be propagated.
Yep.
But once that begins to become like minimized and undermined, and God and people begin to curse the God of the Bible and blaspheme him and just kind of go away from God, then the wicked shall be turned into hell, and then all the nations to forget God.
I think that's always been the case from the Old Testament to the New Testament, which is why in the New Testament we're a even in the Old Testament we're a spiritual nation, you know, we're spiritual people. So just labeling like the United States or even like Armenia, right? Armenia would be the people who would say, look, we're a Christian nation. But that nation is going to hell in a handbasket just because you say, hey, we follow.
Yeah, but we would judge that according to the Bible. Like, we would look at them and say, are they a Christian nation?
Precisely.
Do they have, do they have Bible-believing churches that preach the word of God? Are they seeing souls saved? Like, we can say that of America.
Yeah.
We could look at America and say, yeah, America's pretty bad, but America still has like Bible-believing churches where there's pastors that are thundering forth the truth.
It's the most Christian nation in the world. Yeah.
Or like the most Christian.
I'm not saying what
India,
people say about themselves.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what
India is not a Christian nation.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what people say about themselves. I'm saying what the nation actually is. And you know, you look at the fruits of that nation. Like, are soul winners being sent out? I mean, America's still sending out missionaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's moochinaries, but there's still missionaries that are being sent out that are legitimate missionaries, even from old IFB churches and stuff, or even from non-denom churches, I'm sure, that are going out. And so I think America's still making that considerable effort and can be considered a Christian nation in the sense that, you know, we still have Christians being reproduced in America and being sent out. Mm-hmm. Whereas you can't really say that of Armenia, because even though they claim to be the first Christians, or even if they claim to be Christians now, you know they're Orthodox, they're pagans.
But even if that's true, like, it is true that they're Orthodox and they're pagans, but they still have some remnant of cultural Christianity and like the rule of law. And because of that, because they've had like ancestors for millennia that have followed that, you can look at Armenia and you can look at a place that doesn't have that history.
But
and there's like a stark contrast between
true. It. True. But that advancement will only get you so far.
Yeah, it'll start
deteriorating.
Yeah, and we're talking at a basic level, obviously. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, for example, like Armenia, Armenians, I'm sure, are very, you know, I'm sure they have morals.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to a certain extent, I'm not saying that they're excellent.
It's deteriorating
people.
For sure.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, okay, in comparison to these pagan nations, you would say Armenia has a level of morality there.
Rule of law.
They have laws.
I don't think so. I think on paper, yes. And I think every nation.
Do they think murder is wrong?
I mean, but every man. I mean, you don't necessarily
Do they think adultery is wrong?
Like, in a lot of these like pagan nations, that stuff is accepted. Like, in a lot of places in Africa,
yeah, faggotry is accepted.
A man will go have like many wives. He'll sleep with like a different woman.
Do they believe in polygamy?
Which is why I say it'll only get you so far. But I think like the damnation of some like a place like that, a nation like that, where you kind of ride on the coattails of the name of Jesus, But then at a certain point, when it comes to salvation, you just draw the line and you don't want to go.
Well, past. It's like Nineveh.
Your damnation is going to be greater.
It's like Nineveh. Nineveh was on their way to hell, so to speak. And I'm sure there's people there that were actually saved in Nineveh. And, you know, God was going to destroy Nineveh because he was sick and tired of them. And he sent Jonah to go preach to them, right? And tell them about the wrath to come, not so that the nation could be saved, spiritually speaking, first and foremost. He went there so the nation could just be saved, period, from the wrath of God. And what happens is when you have a nation that repents of their wicked deeds, which is exactly what they did, they repented in sackcloth and ashes. What happens is it becomes fertile ground for people to be saved. Because, you know, someone who's repenting in sackcloth and ashes is humble. And, you know, you have to be converted as a child in order to be saved. And so when a nation accepts all manner of evil and wickedness, the hearts of the individuals of that nation will become hardened to the gospel sometimes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even onto like third and fourth generations.
And yeah, exactly. And what happened with Nineveh, in my opinion, is they got saved as a nation, not spiritually, but they got saved from God's wrath that he was going to pour upon them. And that made them candidates for individual salvation. And a great example of that is Belize.
Or Cyprus, even.
Yeah.
Yeah. Belize is like, you know, those people were ripe for the picking when we went. And I'm sure they're still receptive towards the gospel. But it's no coincidence, because when you go talk to the people in Belize and you ask them what's a really bad sin, they're like, adultery is really bad. Yeah. Like, when have you heard someone say that in America? And you rarely hear the average Joe Schmo saying that adultery is bad.
Didn't you also say that they know the Bible?
They know the Bible.
It's like the Ethiopian eunuch almost in a way. They're thirsting after that righteousness.
They just need and they're just not
a bit
saved.
Of light.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that a society, and I'm not saying that it makes them a Christian nation, but when they have like a sense of morality and they claim to get it from the Bible, mm-hmm. it could, you know, make them candidates for salvation, or it can turn them the complete opposite. Just like the Jews mm-hmm. in Israel, where they became Pharisaical, self-righteous, they became inclusive. They weren't getting the Bible out to other nations, and God had to basically replace them.
Isn't that also the case? Did you go to Cyprus? Have you ever been to Cyprus?
No, I want to go, though.
But isn't it pretty receptive there?
Yes.
Despite it being like Eastern Orthodox, just like Armenia.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's a good example. Like if someone just went there who spoke Armenian or something like that, I'm sure it'd be just very similar to Cyprus.
And so you have the element of like one thing that you have to take into consideration is the element of the next generation, mm-hmm. because you have like a nation like Cyprus or Armenia or Greece, for example, that the Orthodox Church has a pretty strong grip of that nation. Mm-hmm. And if you were to give the gospel to that particular generation, they would be very unreceptive. But then the next generation that comes after them is very sick and tired of the Orthodox Church, and they reject it, which basically makes them open to the truth. So I think that's what's happening in Cyprus and Greece. And that's why Pastor Anderson and his crew were able to get so many people saved. But the people that got saved was like the younger generation. It wasn't the older people. It was the younger generation that grew sick and tired of the Orthodox Church. So I think there's the element of like the next generation, you know, kind of rejecting and resisting the traditional view of, you know, Cyprus or Greece.
It's interesting that you talk about that, because like the last generation, I think in a lot of Eastern Orthodox.
Yeah, I think they should be good.
Okay. This one good?
Yeah, it's
all right.
We start over?
Yeah, I think like where you're talking about how like a lot this last generation in those countries has really embraced the Eastern Orthodox Church, because if you look at countries that are very Eastern Orthodox, like Armenia, like Russia, you know, they're very mm-hmm. Eastern Orthodox. I think a lot of that is our reaction to communism, which was like mm-hmm. explicitly godless, explicitly atheist. So
it's
when
like
they
their knee jerk reaction
exactly.
To that.
So when they come out of that, they hold on to the closest godly thing they have, the thing that looks like godliness, right. which is the Eastern Orthodox Church. But obviously, it's not actually godly, and the next generation is realizing that.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
What I've heard from my parents' generation is that.
Before you say that, you're an example of that, because your parents are Orthodox, right?
Well, not really. I mean, they say they are, but then when you question them, they're not.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that that's what they adhere to.
Yeah, they took that identity as like a response.
That's what they identify as.
I would say maybe half, because what I was going to say is coming out of communism, not my parents' generation, some of them don't even, they're like disenfranchised with Christianity, period. Because it's sort of like, hey, God, you know, where were you when all this happened? Just like the Armenian genocide, they like to say that. You know, where was God? Why did all this happen? If there was a God, this wouldn't have happened.
Wow.
So,
that's rough, dude. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, is what should be said, right?
But they don't say that.
Yeah. Why'd you have to whisper like that?
I know, all dramatic.
I was like, freaking dramatic.
Should I cry right now?
Not anymore.
Where were you when they just like, bro, that. I wasn't even born yet.
Hey, you freaking irritated me every time you drink your drink.
But isn't it crazy?
I hear the ice. It's a whoosh.
Me or him?
No, him. Oh. When he drinks, it's all whoosh.
Right now?
Yeah, when you drink it.
Oh, snaps.
I hear it.
Oh, yeah, I can hear it. Oh, man, that sounds weird.
I like it. Keep doing that.
Oh, dude. No, that sounds weird.
He's an ASMR.
Yes. We should do like an ASMR podcast one day.
Oh, we should.
Just like mic'd everything. Like,
all right, here we go. You guys ready? Welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist Breakfast. This is talking about daily events. I'm your host, Pastor Bruce Mahia, First Works Baptist Church, joined by the fundamentalist,
I like
Dove Macy and Adam Kinzari.
I like it.
Marco Sanchez.
What's up,
we
guys?
Got Ulysses Hernandez. So, you're a dad now, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I really love
him. That's crazy. Yo, let's go. Let's go. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, so about Asian hate.
We should keep that in.
So some of you guys haven't been around over the last couple of weeks. And you took a little bit of a break, but now they're back. I was going to say with the vengeance, but you should not avenge yourselves.
Without the God.
Yeah. Hey, I believe in vengeance, just not for me to execute vengeance. We need to let God avenge us. And so.
I always thought it said vengeance is mine.
So basically,
that was a commandment.
Marvel's wicked.
Yeah, there's more people we got to pray for. I almost got jumped on Saturday at the Soul Winning Marathon, man. Sodomites trying to jump me because I'm preaching the gospel. They recognize me on the news. Just another day in the day in life of an independent fundamental Baptist preacher.
Well, more specific, a new IFB preacher.
A new IFB preacher.
We should make like a documentary about like a day in the life of a new IFB preacher. Like, that'd be cool to like do like a little series like that.
Yeah.
Like just follow a new IFB preacher all day, what he does.
Man, I would hate that, actually.
That would be like super. That's like MTV or something.
Yeah.
What's up, guys?
Welcome to my crib.
Yeah, welcome to my church. Come on in.
This is the sanctuary.
Yeah, this is my evangelist right here.
Yo, say hi to
the
camera.
He's at the computer.
Yeah. Like, why is he looking up Asian hate?
It's real.
Yeah.
This is the horse trough.
So, all right, now we're going to Cane's right now. For the fifth time today. They know my name. They know my special order.
Help NYPD hate crimes. Let me read this. Help NYPD hate crimes identify this individual. They want to talk to him about the assault of a 65-year-old woman during which anti-Asian statements were made. This occurred just before noon today near 43rd Street and 9th Avenue. How old is this post?
It's from yesterday, March 29th.
Can you play the video right there?
March 30th.
Attack on Asian women in Manhattan as bystanders watched to be probed as hate crime. Asian lives matter. So this is a new thing that's going on now. Hashtag Asian lives matter. And it didn't begin with this. It began with something else, right? A man basically shooting up a massage parlor.
Three massage parlors. I think in Atlanta is what it was.
So tell us a story about it. What specifically happened?
So essentially this guy, I don't know if he's a crazed individual, if he's like has demons.
Obviously.
If he has demons or if he has like he's doing it like sober-minded for like vengeance. But basically, he was going to these. He was frequenting these Asian massage parlors,
probably for
prostitution,
yeah.
Right? And unfortunately, that's what they're known for. So, what I think happened is he was probably frequenting these places for their services and stuff, and he got scorned somehow, or he was offended somehow, or something like that. So he went over. I think this was in Atlanta, and he just three different Asian massage parlors that were like miles within each other, and he just shot up all of them. I don't know exactly if there was any death count. I think some people must have died. But now the media is kind of portraying it as an Asian hate. Like, he did this because he hates Asian people.
Yeah.
Right? But I don't think that's really the case. Right. I don't think anybody's really out there, you know.
Yeah, if he was going to, like, those massage parlors to get, like, a service, yeah, like, I don't think that's it. That's the case.
Yeah, yeah. So.
So what's the purpose behind this? What is the agenda behind this? What do you guys think?
Keep turning people against each other.
Yeah, just radicalizing, polarizing people, radicalizing people.
Yeah.
Divide and conquer.
Yep. So, and then you have this most recent event that took place, right? Pull that back up, brother Ulysses.
Bring it up, Jamie.
Where a 65-year-old lady was beaten or something? And did they know why it happened? What's the deal?
That's the problem with
can't read that fast.
That's the problem with just reading the headline. Like,
let's you play the video.
Turn up the volume.
It's a CCTV. There's no volume. Oh, okay.
Basically, that's the guy who supposedly did it, right?
Is that him beating her up? Where is she?
Yeah. The problem with headlines is that, especially when it comes from New York, mm-hmm. it's. There's a lot of information missing, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, the LA Times article about me, how about that one?
Yeah, exactly. Well, what does it mean that he beat her? What does it mean that, you know, it's a hate crime? What does it mean that he said anti-Asian stuff? Like, there's a lot of stuff that could be inserted.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he didn't do it. It says, woman punched, kicked on way to church. Okay, so you have the video right there. That's the lady. Oh, man.
I mean, was this just...
Oh, man. Oh,
unprovoked? Dang. Was this unprovoked? Like, what is this?
Well, obviously, that's super wicked.
Yeah.
That guy is a piece of
beating
crap
a woman
who needs to... Yeah. That's evil, man. He's probably out of his mind.
Yeah. Probably
a psychopath.
Probably on some sort of...
Well, you know what? I mean...
Influencing drug or something.
And I'm not saying, you know... The guy probably does hate Asians. We don't know what's the deal with this guy, you know. But I guarantee you, stuff like this happens all the time. It's just not being covered.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, I remember one time my mom was at a stoplight, and she was going home. This is years ago, and this lady was like driving in front of her, and then all of a sudden the lady stops. And my mom stops. She's like, what's going on? The lady gets out of her vehicle and just starts, like, going off of my mom. And she's, like, slamming the hood and cursing at her and just going crazy. And, like, she's trying to open the door, and my mom's, like, locking it or whatever. And she's just going off of my mom. And she came home, and she was just like, this lady just did. And, I was young at that time, and I was boiling. I was boiling, and I was like, why did she do that? And she was like, I don't know.
These aren't normal people. No normal person just acts like that.
Yeah, but you know what? My mom didn't even say, like, oh, she's being a racist, you know? She just thought, like, this lady was just out of her mind or something. Mm-hmm. Or she mistook her for something, or she had road rage. Maybe my mom cut her off or something like that, or she felt like maybe she was tailgating her. You never know. There's people out there that are just crazy, you know? But the one thing that didn't come to my mom's mind was like, oh, she's just racist against Mexicans or something. You know?
Well, they're just hijacking the narrative.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even catch the guy. So how do you know it's because of racism?
Well, I think too, like, when there's like an incident which happened at the massage parlor, they're going to capitalize on that. And then you can look for whatever you want to find. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, okay, we got to find every Asian crime that's being committed. Because you're going to find one. If you want to find crimes against Mexicans, you're going to find it.
Yeah.
You want to find crimes against whatever, you're going to find it. You know what I mean? Because of the fact that they control the narrative, they can emphasize whatever they want to emphasize.
Yeah, they want to blow up.
And look for all the crimes that are being...
Now?
Yeah, I don't know why Asians.
Well, the reason is because, like, last year in 2020, with when COVID started, you had... Trump saying, like, the China virus.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
They're calling it the Hong flu and stuff like that. Yeah,
and they're saying that was racist.
The Kung flu.
Yeah, the Kung flu. That's what it is.
Isn't that interesting? But when that happened, it wasn't like, I mean, they were making a big deal about
they
it.
They were,
like,
yeah.
But it wasn't to this extent, though.
Well, I think it was building up to it. This is like if they found, like, a new thing to capitalize on, right?
Yeah.
And they're saying, so that rhetoric that Trump was saying about, like, the Kung flu and, like, China virus and China sending their viruses here or whatever, you know, they're saying that, like, oh, that rhetoric now has caused, like, people to hate Asian people or whatever. Yeah. Or, like, to go out and do stuff like this where they just kick some random Asian lady in the street for no reason. But that doesn't really make any sense. Because
it took, like, a whole year.
Nothing on the news makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, the news is just garbage. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's just a tool of the higher-ups to be able to promote their agenda and to manipulate the masses. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's the same thing. It's something interesting about this anti-Asian thing, or like Asian Lives Matter, is it's really similar to like anti-Semitism in that like Jews are very, very well off in America. Mm-hmm. They don't like, they help each other out. They're all pretty rich. Like, it's very rare to find a poor Jew, right? You know what I mean?
I've never met one.
Exactly. And it's kind of the same thing with, like, Asians. They're, like, up there with Jews.
I've been young and
like...
old.
And I've not seen the Jews.
Yeah. Yeah, baking exactly. bread.
And Asians are kind of, like, the same way. Like, they're up there in the socio, like, economic field. They're all pretty, like, well off. They're wealthy. So it's super weird that it's kind of like almost gaslighting. They're saying like, oh, Asians are so oppressed, just like these Jews. But like these are the people who are well off, who are wealthy, you know, carnally, obviously. And it's like, how can these people at the same time be oppressed and be like pushed down and be hated, but also at the same time be like wealthy and have influence and all this stuff? Like, so many CEOs in America are Asian.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing too, is just like when we got our church bomb, no one said it was, I mean, no one said there was like a racist crime against me. In fact, they said I was like a white supremacist somehow.
They're gaslighting people.
They're gaslighting. Even though my skin is brown, I'm Hispanic.
Your last name is Mejia.
Mom's Hispanic. My last name is Mejia. My first name is Delphin. They're just like, oh, no, it's not. He's a hate preacher. It was like, I mean, how come no one out there is saying that it's a hate crime?
Wasn't Biden
a race?
So Trump was really accusing Biden of being kind of in bed with the Chinese, right? When it comes to like finances and business. Maybe what he's doing is trying to bridge the gap between China and America by making us kind of sympathize for the Chinese or something.
Mm.
And then we don't really...
And then he's going to hit us with something? Some sort of deal that he's making with them?
I don't know.
I know. Are the sanctions like off
because
of
it's
China
not for,
now?
It's not for anything that we're seeing this now. I mean, there's got to be something to it. There's some underlying...
I just reset him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, let me read this thing about this. What this? It's really funny.
Read it into the mic. One
second.
Why are you laughing?
It's just funny.
What? What's funny?
I don't know.
Yeah, here we go.
Just a direction.
So this is an article by like a local publication about the bombing, and they say Mejia is more like these fascist preachers than not. Christian nationalism is marked by the fusion of militant Christian supremacy with white nationalism. And though Mejia is undeniably brown, his appearance doesn't...
Undeniably?
wait. So I'm undeniably brown and what?
But your spirit is white.
But you're mixing in militant Christian supremacy with white nationalism is what you're doing.
Did you know that?
And then it continues and it says, so Mejia is undeniably brown. His appearance doesn't foreclose the potential.
Hey, that's racist.
The potential for fascist leadership. So you're a white supremacist fascist
brown.
Well, I don't deny that I'm a Christian supremacist for sure.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a Christian supremacist. So and yeah, then, I'm not going to deny that. But undeniably brown. Hey, he's more brown than I am, man. Can you like...
Alex Jones called us a Hispanic Baptist church.
Mexican Baptist church.
Did he?
Yeah, he says a Mexican...
They're bound to Mexican Baptist church.
Are we?
Are you Mexican?
I'm cool with being Mexican.
I might as well be.
I'm a Southern Californian, so I might as well.
A variation of white supremacy that some theorists term multiracial white supremacy appears to be emerging. And Mejia exemplifies the type of figure that this political movement places in leadership positions.
Anybody with any kind of IQ or sense would read that and be like, dude, this is hilarious. What do you say? Undeniably brown white supremacist.
Yeah.
It sounds like that guy from Dave Chappelle.
Oh yeah, the black blind KKK leader.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically you.
That's me right there, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Multiculturalist white supremacy and the substructure of the body.
See, you read something like that, and that's when you close the tab.
Oh, man.
They're like redefining words, man.
Yeah, of course they are.
It's gaslighting. It's like making you think up is down.
Yeah. They're good at what they do, though. You know what I mean? And people but I'm saying
it. To the stupid people.
Yeah, exactly. to the fools who believe this nonsense. But it's great, though, because when they write things like that, we want intelligent people in our church. We want intelligent people to follow us and or not even just intelligent people. How about people who may be simple-minded, but they have common sense?
Yeah.
Right? Simple people who have common sense would read something like that and be like, I can't make sense of it all, but this is obviously really dumb.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're going for the next generation. They're going for the kids.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, that's what
universities do. They're getting them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they are.
That's what universities do. The universities are pumping these people out.
By the way, speaking of universities, aren't they like kind of shutting out Asians from going into these Ivy League schools because they say there are too many?
Yeah, that's
and at the same time, they're like, "Oh, there's Asian hate, yeah. Dude. You're hating Asians by not letting them like succeed naturally."
There was one story about that in Harvard, but that's kind of what I was talking about. These Asian people are like in Ivy League.
What do you mean these Asians?
No, that sounds racist.
Asian people in America are in these Ivy League schools, and they're
CEOs succeeding.
Praise God. I mean, hopefully they succeed and also turn to God.
But yeah. I have a sister-in-law who was born in China. She's from Dalian, China, and her parents work for the government. They say it themselves, we're a people of the republic. Mm. And she came to Los Angeles to basically, you know, go to school and everything like that. But she had a friend who was Chinese, obviously, and he came from China, and he got saved, and then he ended up inviting her to church, and she came and she got saved, and then she ended up marrying my brother-in-law.
There you go.
You know, and she loves the Lord, and you know they're raising a godly family, and she's completely rejected communism and all that and that mindset, and she's taken on a Christian culture, you know, and so. That's the purpose right there, you know?
Hopefully these people who are carnally wealthy or worldly wealthy, hopefully they get saved and use that wealth for God.
Yeah.
But typically they don't.
Yeah. Well, I've known some people who are wealthy and they have the smarts, mm-hmm. and who've gotten saved and they start living for the Lord. Do you remember Pac? His name is Pac from Pacific?
Yeah, the needle doctor or whatever.
That was he a needle doctor?
Needle doctor.
Maybe that's not a good example.
Or like, I don't know if he was a needle doctor or maybe I'm just being
racist.
I
just know that guy. Yeah, maybe you are being racist.
He was a needle massage doctor. Parlor on the side.
he was a KJV onlyist.
Yeah.
And
he was a doctor though.
Yeah, sure. He was a doctor, but he was like hardcore. And he, you know, he didn't speak English well, but he loved the King James Bible. And he would always tell us, like, oh, he was Korean. I think he was Korean. I might be mistaken. Maybe Chinese. I don't know. He's Asian. But he would often say, like, Koreans are not saved. They're not saved. He goes, most Korean churches in this area, I guarantee you, they're not saved. They don't have the right gospel. They don't preach it right. And they don't use a King James Bible. I mean, he was hardcore, you know. But that's an example of someone who's serving the Lord. And, hey, it can happen.
Amen.
You know,
there's a lot of weird cults that come out of Korea too. Have you noticed that?
Yeah,
like the Mother of God cult, and then there's also like the Faith Union Family thing, and then the Moonies and stuff like that.
What is that?
The Moonies were this group that still exists today that followed this guy called like Sun Young Moon or something like that.
Oh yeah, Sailor Moon. Yeah.
Sailor Moon. But there's like a lot of weird Christian cults that come out of Korea.
Isn't that anime or something?
It's like anime for little girls.
Anime. Yeah, but you know, there's guys who watch that.
I know one guy in this church who watched that. It's not Jason.
Dang.
Michael Kasimov should be on this show.
He knows a lot, he does better writing.
He should write the script.
He's a teacher. Most teachers are good at writing, except for Adam.
Comment down below, Michael Kasimov.
You don't like writing. You told me yourself.
No, but he knows a lot about Asians.
Do you mean, writing? You like to write?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Hold on. Do you like to write?
Yeah, I think
he loves.
Do you like writing articles? Like, can you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good to know.
I like that.
Most teachers do.
I went to originally when I went to college.
He's like, I actually have a book.
it's on Audible. It's
How to Be a Father. Day one. Yeah. He keeps crying.
Hey, speaking of books, I'm rereading a book called Atomic Habits. That's the book.
Buy it.
Some of y'all need that.
I've heard of it.
Some of y'all need
I get book. That a lot at my...
What, this book?
Yeah, like that book. This book is like super popular.
No, I'm saying like what it talks about like habits and addictions. Like I experience that every day walking by like this beautiful fridge at work.
You work at Boot.
Incorrect.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically it's a book on habit formation. And there's another book on habit formation, but it's called The Habit. Oh, look it up, Uli. It's by Duhigg. It's called Habit. There you go. The Power of Habit. That's it right there. What's his name?
Charles Duhigg.
Charles Duhigg. I have that book too. It's not the best one though. And it's fairly long. Most of it is a bunch of stories of people who, you know, have changed their habits. I would say Atomic Habits is a better book. And I promise you, if you read this book, you'll like it. Okay. Because it talks about the fact that, you know, a habit is basically your brain's solution to the problems that you face each and every day, like the challenges you face. So what your brain does is it creates habits so you don't have to expend a lot of energy into making decisions. Because it rather just put the full amount of energy into one specific task. Mm-hmm. So what it will do is it'll just make things second nature sometimes. And that's good and that's bad. It's bad because...
You can form bad habits.
You can form bad habits like eating too many cupcakes, cookies, Red Bulls, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, that's true because like I've been doing like cookies every night lately. See,
and here's the thing. There's something that you're doing that's sparking. There's a cue. Because it says, he talks about in the book how there's a cue, craving, response, and reward. So it's not necessarily the cookie you want. It's the feeling that it gives you once you eat it.
Yeah, it makes me feel some tired so yeah. I can go to bed.
Right.
Yeah. If I don't have that, I feel empty.
It's like this. It's like people who smoke cigarettes, they don't crave smoking a cigarette. They crave the feeling that a cigarette gives you when you smoke it.
That's why they say like, oh, I'm so stressed out.
Like the sense of accomplishment of it.
Well, maybe the reward. Mm-hmm. Maybe it spikes the dopamine. Makes you feel better.
Nicotine has like some effects, like psychologically, not psychological, but physiologically or whatever. Like it gives you, it's a stress reliever, kind of like other.
Yeah, but here's the thing: when you first smoke a cigarette, that's probably not the case.
Yeah, well, you're choking. Same thing with coffee. Like the first time you ever had a coffee in your life, you probably didn't like it. But it's that
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, no, it's like. You had the coffee and then you didn't like it, but hey, it gave you that caffeine kick. So you're like, I want to go back to that.
Did he just say like, I didn't like coffee when I drank?
That's typically the reaction. That's why people drink bitter things because they have a reaction.
This is a strange thing. But he talks about the habit loop, and the habit loop is basically a cue, and the cue is a trigger, that the brain receives to initiate a behavior. You know, and you know, you think of like television, for example, is filled with cues. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just commercials that flash things at you that is like, I want that or I need that, you know. And, you know, and we're creatures of habit. And so, for example, when you wake up in the morning, one of the first things that I do after I wake up is I drink coffee.
Yeah.
Amen.
I drink coffee because I want the feeling of, you know, being awake and having my mind sharp as I read. You know what I mean?
It's associated with like some kind of accomplishment or reward.
A reward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For waking up. Getting up.
The best part of waking up. I mean,
that's a lot of it.
Folgers in your cup.
Some people like, they'll get out of bed so that they can drink the coffee.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why. That motivates them to get out of bed.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the cup of coffee.
Yeah. Society's preferred drug.
Yeah,
it's not.
And
a drug.
And what? And that's how you can actually make it. That's actually how you can break bad habits too. Because if, you know, you have the habit of getting up in the morning because you want to drink a cup of coffee, then what that tells you is like the inversion of that law would be that if there's something that you're doing that you want to stop doing, a habit that you want to get rid of, you have to make the cue just completely hard.
Yeah,
still like wake up like in the morning.
Yeah.
We're not talking about waking up here, Hike. You need to wake up, bro. Okay.
I actually watched a video on that topic about how willpower, like trying to resist something, like trying to resist the temptation, like a cue,
it's not gonna
is
happen.
Way mentally more taxing on than just getting rid of it entirely.
Yep.
So like the example this guy used is he's addicted to playing video games. So what he did is he bought this like little bot like lockbox on Amazon that you put his video game controller in for like 2 hours or 3 hours. So it's literally impossible, and it's on a timer. So it's literally impossible to get in there without him breaking it. Obviously, he doesn't want to break it. The thing was expensive.
Yeah.
So he literally removed that temptation, made it impossible. So like if you want to like kick a habit, just remove it. Don't try to be like strong. And
you make it hard on yourself. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because resistance towards something that you don't want to do is only a temporary fix.
Yeah.
Like you could only resist something for so long.
It's a limited
when it's right there.
It's like a pool. It's like it's like a bucket. You have like a bucket of willpower. And if you run out of it, then
you're only supposed to use it sparingly when it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah.
What you're supposed to do is what the Bible says, which is make no provision for the flesh.
Yeah.
To fulfill the lust thereof. You know what I mean? You know, you gotta like put temptation away from you.
Yeah.
And so, and then when you're put in the place of temptation, deliver us from evil. It's like at that point, you have to resist the devil and he will flee from you.
That's when you used your willpower.
Yeah. And that's one thing that he said is that basically the way you get rid of a habit, a bad habit, is you got to make it really hard, you know? And, you know, for example, and there's all types of things that like formulas that you can use or whatever, where it's like, let's say, for example, you know, you want a cookie. You know, you want to eat a cookie or whatever, and but you know you have to go like you need to go start exercising or running 5 laps or something like that. Well, you basically reward yourself and say, well, after I'm done running 5 laps, then I'll have the cookie. Mm-hmm. And now the desire to eat the cookie triggers you to go run because you know at the end of that 5 laps, you're going to taste the cookie.
It's like getting up out of bed for the coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. What are you laughing at, dude?
The way Marcos is paying attention like so deeply.
Maybe you
should. Maybe you should be paying attention too.
He just told me he had an issue with cookies. Yeah. That's why he was like paying such close attention.
So I went from cookies. Saying. Now I'm eating Cookie Crisps.
What is that?
Dang.
What
it's a cereal.
Oh, what
it's just
heck?
Cookies. It's just a cereal.
Yeah, and you know what? Some habits you just don't want to kick. Why kick them? You know what I mean? But I'm saying if it's messing with your life, if you feel like
your
it's
family.
Just like.
That's why I don't consider coffee a drug. It's not messing with my family.
That's not the criteria for drugs.
Coffee helps. Coffee. I love drinking coffee when I like.
Coffee's
going to
help me with my family.
Hey, drinking coffee, drinking coffee and reading your Bible is great.
It's the best thing ever.
It's awesome. I like to read my Bible. And then when you get that nugget of truth, you take a sip of coffee.
Yeah.
Like, that was good. That was good, Lord. But yeah, it's really interesting, and you know, there's things called habit stacking where you can add habits and stuff like that. But the biggest thing is like you got to make it unattractive. You have to like put it away from yourself, and then it gets to a point where you know, because people are naturally lazy, so you have to use your natural laziness, your natural inclination to be lazy,
mm-hmm.
for your benefit. Like I'm just too lazy to go sin. I'm too lazy to go get that cookie. Right?
Basically, you have to outsmart yourself, like your subconscious.
You have to think 2 steps ahead of yourself.
You don't have to outsmart yourself. It's not a matter of outsmarting yourself.
I'm not smart,
bro. We're not freaking. What do you call it? We don't have split personalities here. Okay, you're basically
have your subconscious mind, and then you have your conscious mind. But then you have to use. I guess
the conscious mind.
He's drowning.
No, I get what he's saying. It's like
to override what your subconscious wants to do.
You have like the system 1 and 2 is what you were talking about. Like the one that forms habits and the one that's like consciously like, don't do this.
Well, that's the end game.
Mm-hmm.
But previous to that, you have to work your way to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the way you work your way to it, because you're conscious of your temptation, obviously. You're conscious of what you want.
I don't think so always, because like that's what subliminal messaging is in like advertisement and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you were now at that point you're getting pretty deep. I'm saying like he freaking knows that he likes
cookies.
But
it's the same
thing. Right? I'm talking about that. Like you know your desires. You know your desires. So and here's the thing, obviously you have to know what your temptations are, or else how are you gonna change your habits?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to know what you're tempted with. You understand? So it's not necessarily like a brain hack, it's more so training your mind to form a new habit and get rid of an old one by making a temptation hard to get. And you're using your lack of effort You know, because here's the thing. Sometimes we won't do things because of the amount of effort that it takes to do it. Mm-hmm. And so if it requires too much effort, it's like, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's this guy. This is an example. It's just like he would watch too much Netflix or something. Mm-hmm. So what he would do is he would take his TV or whatever and he'd unplug it, put it in the closet, close the closet, put a bunch of stuff on there. And so, like, you know, he wanted to start running, or I can't remember what it is he wanted to do. But then he's just like, man, I want to watch Netflix. It's like, it's going to take too much to take the TV out, set it up. And because it required too much effort, he got rid of that habit of watching Netflix or something. And then he would just exercise during that time.
Dang.
So it's basically saying, like, what?
I said, not for me. Like, if I don't have any cookies at home, I will literally get up at midnight and go to 7-Eleven and go get cookies. I'll come past sea and land.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The cue and the reward is what you have to figure out.
Yeah, what is making you, bringing you to that temptation?
Nighttime.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to get tired, so you have to figure out a different way to be tired.
So you have to stop
it. You see what I'm saying? It clicked.
At midnight, you have to be asleep and not awake.
Your body wants a cookie because it makes you like drowsy, it makes you tired.
Yeah, because
that's really what you're looking for.
Because after I get home from the gym, I just want something like sweet. Yeah. You know? So like,
but that's just an addiction. That's another addiction to sugar.
Yeah.
Which is another drug, basically.
Here we go.
Yeah. I was telling Joshua the other day, because Joshua was asking me, he's like, is it fun being an adult? I'm like, put it this way, man. Like, I can get up at midnight and go to a 7-Eleven and go get cookies if I wanted to.
That's like the highlight of being an adult.
Yeah, that's like a different adult, bro. He needs to ask like an actual grown adult who's married with kids.
He's about to get married.
I know. That's the thing.
Try that when you're married, dude.
Yeah, you can't do that when you're married.
Where are you going?
Cookies.
Dad, you're asking.
Dad, are you question gonna, is Dad, are you going to come back?
Is it fun being an adult?
What do you want?
the
what do you want from 7-Eleven?
The proper answer should have been, life's not about fun, son. It's not about having fun.
You should have said it just like that, too.
Yeah.
Kids
life's about rhymes. When you grow old, when you become an adult, when you start getting older, you want to serve the Lord.
Well,
it's
I
about
did,
accomplishing things.
I
about achieving.
Him, I did tell him that later on, though. But I mean, like,
that's what I meant.
Having cookies is important.
That's what I meant by cookies. Cookies was an analogy to serving the Lord, basically.
Yeah.
Going to 7-Eleven was like going to church.
It's the cue and the reward is what you got to figure out. But I mean, if you feel like cookies aren't destroying your life, then have at it, dude.
Not diabetic yet.
I'm talking about things, habits that are just destructive. Like energy drinks.
Yeah.
Like drinking a crazy amount of energy drinks is very destructive.
Dang, that's another one that got kicked in. I have one like every day.
Dude, you got to.
Before I go to the gym.
You got to drop that. Or maybe just do it like once.
It's funny because like it doesn't even do nothing to me anymore. I just do it.
That means
like,
you got
to
kick it out. If it doesn't do anything.
I'm drinking 300 milligrams of caffeine like a couple hours before bed.
Oh. There's some people in our church who can't go to sleep without caffeine. It's like it's too far at that point. You need to quit.
Are you talking about your wife?
No.
Who told me their wife is like that? Someone was gossiping about their wife. Was it you?
I was talking about.
How's the camera?
Good.
What's that government psyop where they kind of show you the Queen of Hearts and then you go kill someone? What was that called?
MK Ultra?
MK Ultra, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't.
Did you just activate it?
Doesn't it really?
It's like
it really boils down to that.
What?
It's like a word that they say that
because those are the cues.
You.
When you're talking about like
that's
advertising.
Like mind control, bro.
Well, what do you think advertising is?
They're not feeding you LSD. That's what MK Ultra did. They fried your brain with LSD and then
okay,
you went
but it's
crime.
It's the same path. You
what?
Walk down this path.
No,
and then
it's
you,
not the same.
I think
because,
so. I think it is.
No, because I'm not like oh,
because there's subliminally
those people,
controlling.
Yeah, but those people are not like Queen of Hearts
or activate.
It's gonna just spike my dopamine if I go kill someone. It's like, dude, we're talking about things that like you feel a sensation, a sense of reward, a spike in dopamine.
But that's what they do. They'll torture you. And
who? Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot that part. I torture myself when I won't.
No, they torture. This is why I think like some
that's
victims,
more mind control. That's more wait. Like abuse.
I get it, but then it leads down the same road. I get, but it's different.
It's like a lighter version.
Well, I'm not saying it's exactly the same, but I'm saying it's the same road. It kind of leads down to that.
But that's different because they remove your capacities to think. Like, we don't...
Well, I think what they do is they remove your capacity to judge what is right and wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they fry your brain with all sorts of drugs.
Whereas...
Well, it's not really the habit. It's the reward.
It's on the road. Yeah,
it's the reward. But it's the same thing in advertising. It's a reward. And it's the same thing like in MKUltra when they torture a guy for 24 hours and then they don't. That don't part becomes the reward. That's why victims fall in love with... You know, they're kidnappers
Stockholm
and stuff.
Syndrome.
Because, yeah. That's yeah. Stockholm syndrome, but that's not the same thing as a habit, though. It's not the same thing.
Okay, yeah, but not habit. A habit, the reward.
What?
The reward part is the same, not the habit part.
But what is the...
What is the reward for those who are in Stockholm, have Stockholm syndrome? There is no reward.
I don't know if it's called Stockholm syndrome.
It is called Stockholm syndrome. But when someone falls in love with their captors, that's called Stockholm syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Or their abuser.
No, but I'm talking about, somebody who gets abused by a certain person, right? And then... That moment where they're not abused, or that certain time of week
becomes
or day
the reward.
Becomes the reward, but it really just goes back to reward and the subconscious.
Maybe that's like
the
psychological
mind.
Thing behind it, but like
it's not the same as the habit.
I don't think so. No, it's
yeah, but I'm not just not talking about a habit. I'm talking about the reward.
Well, that's where we're talking about habits because the reward is built into the habit. That's how we even started talking about it, right?
And with that, there's no cue, there's no temptation. It's like a completely different, like, psychological, like...
Category.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it's, like, just a different...
Let's just... Yeah, it's the same thing.
But then... Okay, hold on. There are steps. It kind of transitions into the advertising thing, where they advertise to you and you become, like, this
but that happens
Pavlonian
first.
Dog... Right,
but that happens first. It's the cue is the advertisement, and then that comes the temptation and the reward. It's like backwards with like a battered wife syndrome or something like that. It's completely different.
So, anyways, it's a great book if you want to learn how to develop good habits and break bad ones. And you know what? It's really good for like, for example, like the Christian life. If people struggle to read their Bible, if they struggle to pray, if they struggle to, you know. Get some spiritual discipline in their life, using this habit loop actually helps with that. You got to create a habit. Because, you know, I've known people who literally have a lot of successful habits, like good habits, and they don't really put a whole lot of effort into doing it because of the fact that they have this system down. And there's certain times, I mean, all of us have a habit that we do that's a good habit. And we would say, like, we don't really put a whole lot of effort into doing this specific thing, which is something that we just naturally do.
It's like going to church. Like, you don't wake up Sunday, well, for a lot of people, I assume, you don't wake up Sunday, like, consciously being like, oh, do I go to church today or
right.
not?
It's just a
habit.
If you've
been doing it for years and years, you're like, oh, it's Sunday,
well,
I go
how about
to church.
This? You know, if you go to a specific location frequently, if you drive to a specific location, like church frequently, mm-hmm. or any other place, like your job, you take a specific road.
Yeah.
And have you ever had that moment where you get on the freeway, and you reach there, and you're like, wait, how did I even get here?
Yeah.
That's what that is. Yeah. Because your brain knows as soon as you get on this ramp, it already knows what to do, and it goes into like that secondary
autopilot.
Mode. Yeah, and then you can you think about other things. You're even switching lanes.
Yeah.
You know where the exit is. But your brain's doing it, but you're not necessarily even conscious about it. And when you get there, you're like, how did I even get here?
Did I teleport?
Mom?
So you're just kind of, it becomes like muscle memory. You know what I mean? So
it's literally like the neurons in your brain forming those pathways.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Your brain can focus on its energy on something else.
Right.
I'm still forming that pathway getting here. I have no idea what it's so far out.
Mine's already embedded now.
Really?
When it coming over here. Like initially I was just like, oh man, this is like.
So confusing.
I'm like looking at my phone. I'm like, where am I? But now I can just listen to a book and just drive. And then I already know exactly, like. I just get there.
I depend on Google Map or Apple Maps way too much, like to find the best exit and stuff like that. I got to stop doing that because sometimes it works against you.
Oh, yeah.
It takes you on city streets and there's like a billion red lights and you're like, this is taking longer. I hate that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back in the day, they used to use like the Thomas.
Thomas Guide.
Thomas Guide.
That's crazy to me because I didn't start driving until like Apple Maps or like Maps were well established. I can't believe at like one point people had like atlases and they
I remember my
and people. You know what? People's brains were like,
they memorized phone numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember being a kid memorizing like tons and tons of phone numbers.
I still remember my old phone number.
It wasn't hard at all. But we don't do that anymore. No. Like, I don't know. I can't even tell you my wife's phone number. Let me just be honest. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I just know your phone number because it's just my phone number with two different numbers at the end.
That's it. I think my wife's number is almost the same.
Yeah.
But I still don't know it.
Is it 2847?
Yeah. I mean, people used to, I mean, like, you know, how do I get there? Okay, well, you go, you know, you take this freeway, get off in the street, make a right, and it's just like people would memorize that or write a piece of paper and then just get there.
That's something I've actually noticed about people who live in Los Angeles. You got, like, people who've lived here for a long time, you guys, like, know where, like, the highways are and, like, what, like, the cross-section of highways and where this place is. And you, like, you were telling me earlier that, like, that's right off the 405, right? And I'm like, I guess. But, like, when I grew up in Vancouver, it's, like, not like that at all. It's like a completely different, like, navigation.
You pass that maple tree over there, and then you keep going.
That's what it feels like.
You're
going
to see a moose over there, okay? They're going to give you the directions.
Like, and ride a boot when you get to the when you get to the Tim Hortons.
Moose. He has no antlers, okay? So don't look him in the eye. Just keep going.
He gets the horn. He gets mad when you look him in the eye.
That's funny, bro. So funny. Yeah, I mean, what did you say? Basically, the neurons, right? When you create a new habit, they've actually observed that, how neurons actually begin to connect, like new neurons.
Pathways.
Yeah, pathways. And they actually observe the neurons, the brains of taxi drivers in New York. And they're just so complex.
Really?
Yeah, because they just memorize so much.
Dang.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, they're constantly driving everywhere. So they just.
Almost like a map of New York City.
Yeah. And then when they retire, their brains begin to, like, die down. Like, those neurons begin to go away and they begin to fade out because they're no longer using them, you know? So it's important to memorize, to learn how to memorize or to memorize scripture and information because it's good for your brain, you know. It'll help you so you don't get Alzheimer's too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people, they actually get Alzheimer's after they retire, like a couple years after they retire.
After they stop kind of using their brain.
Yeah. Because, you know, they sit down, they retire, they sit down and just watch TV all day.
Mm-hmm.
It just destroys your brain. So one sure way to make sure you never get Alzheimer's is just read, use your brain, just constantly exercise that thing, you know? I could be wrong, but I would think, like, Christians should never get Alzheimer's because they're constantly reading the Bible. Mm-hmm. If you're reading the Bible, you know, you're constantly memorizing the Bible,
comparing scripture,
making connections, preaching the Bible, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, like when you're reading the Bible, like, sometimes, like, during preaching or something, like you hear a verse or something, like, you make connection, like, with another verse, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know if that helps you, like, access, like, your subconscious, because, like, sometimes you're reading the Bible and, like, you know, just a verse, you've read it so much, it's just, like, a verse that just keeps getting embedded. And when you hear a preaching, you tie it with that other verse and, like, oh, okay, like, that
makes sense. Yeah, and I'm sure preaching creates more neuron pathways.
Mm-hmm.
If you're reading the Bible constantly, because I'm sure as I'm preaching, you're making connections to other portions of scripture and your brain is working during that time. You know? I mean, I even think sometimes when I'm preaching, there's things that are not in my notes that come to me at that moment.
Yeah.
There's actually something that's kind of like a swerve of topic, but, like, there's actually, like, a hypothesis that things like dementia and Alzheimer's are actually, like, a form of type 3 diabetes. And there's, like, a lot of studies between insulin resistance and insulin spikes and the development of Alzheimer's disease. And people who have type 1 and type 2 diabetes are way, way more likely to have Alzheimer's.
Wow.
It's like magnitudes. And so there might actually – this is kind of like a completely different topic, but there might actually be, like – because, it like, Alzheimer's is kind of like a recent, so to speak, like, its last, like, maybe century. It's kind of a recent disease, you know? And if you look at, like, the eating habits of the last century as well, it's gotten a lot carb heavier, a lot sugar heavier, refined sugars and stuff like that. So there might be a
connection between
those. It's a hypothesis. It's, like, it's still coming out. There might be a connection between insulin resistance and Alzheimer's because they don't really know where Alzheimer's comes from yet. There's still, like, a kind of gray area technically. Like, they know what it is, but they don't know what develops it.
You tired, Ulysses? He's getting tired. We got to get going because he's driving me home and I don't want to die.
Hey, that's how I drank coffee with two shots.
Oh, man. Hey, you should be getting sleep now, though. You're getting sleep now, right? Hopefully. It's working full time. Well, gentlemen, I think that's it for tonight. Is there anything else you guys want to mention? Marcos is getting married May 1st.
Yep.
Excited for this guy here.
Yep, finally.
He's the last one of the Postmates to get married. Amen.
Postmates?
It was like a little group that we had. It was like the post-trip, pre-wrath, rapture mates.
Is that the one where you're all like squatting with like...
No, no, that was the tour group. Postmates was actually Brother Marcos, me, Ulysses, Alex, and David.
Alex Perea?
Yeah, Alex Perea. Yeah. That guy. I'm just kidding. He's cool. Shout out to Brother Alex Perea.
He's going to be a dad soon too.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's true. Yep. All right, guys. Well, I think we're going to call it a night. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Rod of Iron podcast. Make sure you hit the like button, put a comment in the section below, share it with others. And if you want to listen to just the audio, you can listen to the full episodes on Spotify. And we will see you in the next episode. Dun, 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 dun.